Welcome to Larimer County Republican Radio. We are your source for what you need to know here in Northern Colorado. Every week, we will be discussing local news, legislation, elections, interviewing both candidates and elected officials, and keeping you up to date on important upcoming events. Larimer County Republican Radio is Jerry Patterson, the Internal Vice Chair of the Executive Board, and myself, Jason Van Tittenhove, bonus member to the Executive Board of the Larimer County Republican Party. Hello, Larimer County, and welcome to Episode 3 of Larimer County Republican Radio. I'm Jason Van Tittenhove.
And I'm Jerry Patterson.
Well, we're starting off this week. Seems like our great governor has been in the news quite a bit, Hickenlooper.
Yeah.
So we had to touch base on that. He just seems to be just everywhere in the news this week.
Yeah, he's Mr. Popularity, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, you know, it all started off, I don't know, again, we've talked about grassroots radio before. And it seems to start it off with one of the hosts there filing an ethics complaint against Hickenlooper.
That's about time someone took the Democrats to task on that. Scott Gessler's been dealing with that for the last 6 months on pretty trumped up charges, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, it did cost the state quite a bit to defend those. And maybe that should have been handled differently, but you know, to start with, those charges just didn't seem to hold water. And yeah, he was found to be
in violation, but I mean, yeah, it was crazy. So here we have, what was the details around that? He charged some of his expenses, Gessler did, he charged some of his expenses to the state, and then later decided that was probably not okay and repaid them before anyone said anything.
Right, so he basically went to an election law class and then went to the Republican National Convention. You know, both of these things I would see as being related to his job.
To a degree, yeah. And, I mean, you know, he realized that since the convention was mostly just a political thing for his own purposes, you know, he paid the money back. I mean, it's one of those things where you kind of, in hindsight, you go, okay, yeah, you know, it was a little fuzzy to start with, and he wanted to do the right thing, and you know,
and in the end, he did.
Instead of punching him in the face, right. We should be thanking him for trying to do such a good job.
And, well, fast forward to now,
yeah,
and we have a very similar ethics complaint that's been filed, this time not on the Secretary of State, but on the governor, Hickenlooper. He's coming under fire for alleged misuse of a state airplane. And again, you know, he used a state-owned airplane to fly himself, his son, and a political supporter to the kickoff of a bicycle race in Durango last August.
Wait, let's go back to the part where he took a political supporter with him?
Yeah.
I wonder how much he gave to be able to take that little plane ride on a state airplane.
Well, apparently he's a max donor, so...
Oh, yeah, well, hey!
A fairly expensive plane ride. But, you know, again, Colorado Peaks Politics reported that Gard is a frequent contributor. And that's the guy who was on the plane. And that his family's given about $13,000 in campaign contributions. So about that much.
Okay. Well, that's,
cool. But he owns the Gart Brothers chain of sporting goods, or what was at one point Gart Brothers.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it sure sounds a lot like this complaint that, you know, against Gessler. And, you know, every news agency in the state jumped all over the Gessler story, and you know, we can't even get the Denver Post to even run a story on the ethics complaint against the governor.
Oh, shocker! Well, it's because Colorado Ethics Watch didn't file it, and I'm surprised, really. Oh, okay. Well, maybe not.
Well, you know, that wasn't the only news he was in this week.
Yeah.
We had another hit to our local job base. You know, one of the big things that he had been pushing was all these big job packages, and one was with GE. It was going to be opening a $300 million plant scheduled to employ 355 people, and GE came out and said that we've decided it is not in the best interest of GE, our customers, or the Denver community to move forward with the build out of this facility.
Wow.
Said Lindsay Thiel, a GE spokesperson. So
this is after Hickenlooper actually announced it, right?
Yeah, he announced it. And you know, we also just lost apparently the Hallmark Channel.
You
know, according to Colorado Peaks Politics, was going to be doing a Western miniseries here in Colorado, and they decided to move that from here to Canada because of inadequate tax incentives and environmental concerns around
Shocker.
Building a set. So,
shocker.
Yeah. Anyway, so that you know, just icing on the cake.
Well, and we want to, you know, tax incentives. We want to increase taxation here in in Colorado, don't we? So to fix this problem, we're going to increase our taxes.
No, we're going to get into that more later.
We are.
And how that doesn't quite work.
It doesn't quite work out. Yeah, no.
So the other aspect here, the third strike that we've seen the governor in the news this week is, talking about these backroom deals. I thought the Dems ran on this whole transparency platform.
Yeah, we got to get this all out in the open. You know, I'm all for that. I think clean government is good government. Always. I've always believed that. I always believed the more we can get in front of the American people, the better. There's times where discretion is useful, but, the Constitution, for example, was crafted in a veil of secrecy until that point in time when, they were done. And then it all came out to light. Military action sometimes requires discretion, right? You can't just be talking about everything that you're doing out in the public. That's not wise. It's a good way to defeat yourself. So I get it. There's times, but this isn't what the governor's talking about here.
Right. Yeah. And here we're talking about, he's announcing his support for a $1 billion tax hike behind closed doors.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a little unpopular to be talking about tax increases. And so, if you could just kind of secretly get it done.
Yeah, and he's trying to backtrack now and say he didn't actually say it. But, he actually came out and said it to Time Magazine. So kind of hard to say, I didn't say that, and I did say that, and I didn't say that. So, just been an interesting week for Hickenlooper in the news. So thought that would be our local news section.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to complain when a rag in the tank for Democrats comes out and just kind of outs you as someone that doesn't like, transparency in government and all this stuff. He wants the smoke-filled rooms, it sounds like. He wants to go back
to... It really does. Well, he's a businessman. That's what he's used to. He's used to not having to be in that public light.
And
unfortunately, politics don't work that way, especially, when... apparently they do. Apparently you can just come out and say, I'm all for transparency, and then run the most opaque administration in the history.
The history of the country.
Yeah, and it's okay as long as you've said that you believe in transparency.
Well, sure.
That's a key point.
And, it seems to me, and I could be wrong here, but it sure seems to me like the media has given Obama and Hickenlooper and these guys a whole heck of a lot of cover. Like you said, they're not even running the ethics case, which seems like a pretty, if Gessler's case was in violation, certainly this one is. This is completely personal. This had nothing to do with being governor of Colorado, and he used state resources for that. That's a problem to me. And not only did he use state resources, he swooped up one of his best supporters,
right,
and took him with
the whole the whole intention of that law. The I believe it comes from Amendment 60.
I think so. I can't remember what number it is. We'll look that up.
The intent of the law was to keep from buying influence, and that sure seems to be what happened exactly there.
I'm sure they just talked about fishing on the way to
to
the event.
Politics
no politics whatsoever. Yeah.
So, we do. Well, that's politics as usual, right?
I guess, unfortunately.
Okay, well, moving on. We do have some races coming up, and we've had some people announce that they're going to be running for some different things. So let's move into that. What do we got going
on? Well, Ken Buck just came out and announced he's going to be making a bid for Senate here. And it's great. Now we have three people running here in Colorado that I know of that's announced so far. I don't know if anyone's thinking about it. I haven't heard any rumors. I don't know if you have.
No, I have not.
Okay. Well, so Ken Buck, we have Owen Hill, and Randy Baumgartner now are all in the race for Senate on the Republican side. So it's great. It's a good field. They're all great folks. All in their own rights appeal to different parts of people in the state. It's going to be an interesting race. I'm pretty excited about it.
I got to say, I really like Ken Buck. When I first started getting involved with politics, he was one of the first people to come up and introduce himself to me, sat right down next to me. And really, him and his wife have just been so welcoming and really helped me get my feet wet in the world of politics here in Northern Colorado. And I just think he's a great guy. That's just my own personal opinion and just from knowing him. But he's the only one I know out of the race, so he's the only one I can speak of.
Well, I'll tell you, Owen Hill is definitely a good a conservative guy, in my opinion, liberty-leaning. He's run campaigns before, you know, kind of run for different things in the state before, and has a great, I think, view on kind of where the party is going to some degree, it feels like to me, and has kind of the liberty-leaning side dialed in. And then we've got Randy Baumgartner, who's just a real... He's got a real awesome personality. I love him. I heard him speak at the last state central committee meeting, and just a fantastic guy. You know, a little bit like Patrick, you know, when he gets up in front of everyone and says, "Howdy, Republicans," you know, and it's got that same kind of just timbre, you know, that same spirit. And I love that. And he's definitely got appeal with ranchers out in the eastern part of the state, and definitely from the western slope where he's from. And so it's a great, like I said, it's a great three-way race. I'm looking forward to seeing how it all flushes out.
Yeah, really, we've got some good contenders, and I think that's the most important part of this whole thing is we've got some good people running.
Just shows some strength. I mean, yeah. which is refreshing, to be honest. It's great. I'm excited. I really am excited about it.
Yeah. Now we've also got the governor race coming up too, and speaking of Gessler. He's also as decided, good of a job as he's done as state secretary.
And he's done a great job. I'm really going to miss him there as Secretary of State.
I think even though he was our hatchet man,
you know, when we were dealing with the fines. But, you know, he was good. He was fair. He's fair to all sides. You know, we talked earlier about the ethics thing. You know, he tried to do the right thing there before anyone ever said anything about it. He's just an all-around, he's the kind of guy you want in government, you know? Right. And so he's thrown his hat in as governor after starting his campaign for Secretary of State's re-election and moved over to governor after he found an outpouring of support. And so good for him. And again, this is another three-way race at this point, and lots of great candidates.
What do you know about the other candidates?
Well, we got Tom Tancredo. I think he maybe ran before
maybe.
For governor. If you don't know much about Tom, he's run, he was a United States Congressman for a long time from Colorado Springs area. He kind of made himself famous in talking about really trying to make an issue of immigration, seeing that as a problem before. I think a lot of people were really paying attention to it. And they call him all kinds of crazy stuff because he comes out and says, you know, we need to have some control around this. And so, of course, he's a xenophobe. He's one of those wacko xenophobes. It's like, no, he's really not. It's not that he hates immigration or immigrants.
He's conservative. He's got certain values he wants to uphold.
Well, not only that, but he's just raising the flag. It's like, hey, this is a problem. He sees Pueblo. You know, he's not that far from Pueblo, and he sees some of the problems that are going on there. And yeah, some of that's related to the fact that we've got illegal immigration going on, and some of these people are not, you know, coming here for work. They're coming here for other activities, maybe drug running and stuff like that. It's a problem, you know. And so he's addressing that, and of course getting a lot of flack for it. And then we've got Greg Brophy. And Greg Brophy's been a great state legislator for us. Just a solid, smart guy. And so, these three guys, like I said, again, it kind of shows the strength of the party. We've got three tremendous guys. I wouldn't complain if any one of them won the race and beat Hickenlooper, which more and more of a possibility.
Any one of those guys is going to do a 110% better job than Hickenlooper.
Not like 510%, but yeah.
But I think anytime we have a big backlash that we've been beaten up, with all these new laws and just seeing things move in a direction that we're not okay with. Whenever that happens, we're going to see a pushback. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a real pushback. People are saying, you know what, I've got to get involved and I've got to make a change. And that's right. Where we see some of these great candidates coming to the forefront.
Yeah, and we can't let our government just kind of wash over us. And that's good. That's I don't care what side you are, what persuasion you are. Don't let the government wash over you. Get involved.
Exactly. Now, moving on, we've got this new bill being pushed by yet another...
Well, it's already been passed.
It's already been passed.
Yeah,
it's not no longer a bill. It's now law.
Yeah.
But very unpopular, and it's going to have some major effects, not only on Republicans, but on the Democrats as well. And I think, you know, much like this healthcare thing, once they pushed it through without realizing the damage it was going to do, And
honestly, Jason, I think they knew exactly what it was going to do, and they didn't care. And that's
I
the
think
thing.
The average voter, I don't know, necessarily knew that it was going to increase their you know, utility bill so much. I mean, we're
Talking about the initiative that started out. Okay, yep. I'm sorry.
So, you know, what I'm talking about here is, you know, we've got Giron, who, you know, obviously is unpopular these days with the whole recall election, and seems to be really out of touch with her constituents, and yet again is moving forward with a
with support for this bill that the last legislature passed that was just, you know, basically was forcing our public co-ops to take 20% of their energy from renewable sources.
Right. And this is going to, you know, especially people that are in the rural areas, they're going to see a tremendous increase in their utilities because of this.
Yeah, we've already seen, you know, the initiative you talked about earlier has increased energy costs in the state, and we'll see that continue to climb with this.
Right, and this has all been sponsored by the Obama Environmental Front Group, the I Will Act on Climate, which, you know, has had a bus tour, and it links all these droughts and Hurricane Katrina and wildfires to climate change, you know, regardless to what NOAA has to say to the contrary, saying that it's just not the case.
NOAA, aren't they a government agency?
Yes, they are.
And they employ what, scientists, I think, right?
Yeah, actual scientists.
Yeah, scientists that are, they must be flat earthers, according to Obama.
Apparently.
Yeah, yeah. This isn't up for debate anymore.
Anyone
that
doesn't believe in climate change needs to be put to death, apparently.
Or something.
We're back to the Inquisition.
Or at least, I taken to task for being stupid. And the thing is, you know, what's funny, just related, this just came to mind. I've got to talk about this. You know, the Democrats in Congress actually had a panel of experts, or so-called experts, come and talk about climate change. And there were some pretty, pretty extreme people on that panel.
Right.
Okay. You know, Obama a couple months ago did come out and say, hey, you know, the time for discussion for climate change is over, and we can't have a debate with a flat Earth society anymore. He actually said that, and if you missed that, you should go back and just look up flat Earth society and Obama, because the quote's going to be classic. Because what happened was, is later on this, so a couple of weeks ago in this panel, you know, like I said, there's some conservatives there, some people the Republicans that are, you know, and let's be clear. No one's saying that the climate's not changing. That's dumb. The climate changes. Now, it's the causes, you know, the scientists are still working that out.
Carbon dioxide, you know, we all breathe out carbon dioxide every day. You know, it's part of the natural system.
Yeah, and I'll talk about kind of what some of the conservatives said on that since I brought it up. So one of the, I think it was Jeff Sessions, God bless him, you know, he said, hey, here's what Obama said a couple of weeks ago, you know, and quoted his environmental speech that he gave. Is there anyone on this panel that supports the quote unquote facts that he presented in his speech? Not a single one on that panel would say that they supported what he said or agreed with it or said that it wasn't wrong. There was not a single one that would stand up and say that. Now, the conservatives on the panel, of course, we've got Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is on this panel, and, you know, she's talking about how the hurricanes and everything else, you know, and are destroying. It's so obvious. All you have to do is look out your window, and I'm thinking, you're crazy. I don't think that's true, and in fact, you know, later on, the more conservative panel members said, you know, again, no one's saying that there's no change in climate. It happens.
Absolutely.
But there's plenty of models out there, and this is what one of them said that I thought was great, and I wish I had that in front of me. You know, one of them said, basically, look, we've been trying to model this for the last 20 years. All the model predictions are wrong. And not just a little bit. They're a lot wrong.
Right.
The people that are making these claims about the environment and about where these models are taking them shouldn't be allowed to say anything about it until they verify their models. At this point, they've lost credibility. And that's the, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Jason, we should take care of the environment. We should be good stewards
of
the environment.
We absolutely should be.
Absolutely. Yeah. No one's arguing that. And that's the thing that drives me crazy is, you know, we've got Republicans that are getting lambasted for wanting to tear up the earth and destroy everything. And, you know, we want acid rain and blah, blah. It's not true.
But if we're going to start doing things like carbon taxes and things like that, and, you know, we've got to have some actual science behind it. We want to see the truth. We're not going to just take someone's word for it. You know, we've got to get out of this notion that we're going to pass legislation without even reading the legislation first.
Well, not even reading it. And then what's more is, why are we passing legislation to try to create reality? You know, the carbon tax, the tax and credit system, I get where they're going with that. It's they're trying to build an economy around trying to force people to, basically businesses, not really people, but businesses to try to be more conservative when it comes to emitting pollutants. It's an interesting idea, but it won't work because it's not real. It's an entirely fake, made up economy. We've seen how that works in things like the housing bust. The housing bust came about in part because Congress. What did Congress do? They told people, they told businesses, they told banks that they had to go lend money. They had to be loose with their lending. And so what did the banks do? And what did investors do? Investment agencies, they turned around and turned that risk into derivatives. They tried to take that risk and spread it out. Well, all that happened was is they spread out the risk into an entire market space that totally upended when they put too much risk in it. Right. And because it wasn't real.
Right.
They were giving out loans that weren't good.
Yep.
I mean,
see what came back to roost from that.
Yeah. We cannot afford to have government try to dictate reality. Government needs to respond to reality.
Sustainable. I mean, they talk about all this sustainable practice. The whole notion of you know, creating this legislation, it's not sustainable. I mean, just the way we're moving forward.
They just can't make stuff up, Jason.
No.
But here we are. Here we are making stuff up with this legislation. These co-ops are going to have to put in place 20% renewable energy by what was it? 2015?
Looks like it was 2020, actually.
Yeah, so in 2020, they're supposed to have 20% of their energy coming from renewable sources. Again, I'm all in favor of looking at alternative sources for energy. I sure as heck am tired of all the crud going on in the Middle East and how, you know, we've tangled ourselves up in there. Yeah, you know, to some extent, I mean, I don't know that we would, I think it'd be flyover country, quote unquote, to some extent, if they didn't have such vast oil supplies.
Right, but to mandate it at what cost? I mean, when we look at where our state economy is and what people are doing, you know, we're still in recovery here, folks. We're still, a lot of people are just having trouble making their utility payments, you know, making a living, period.
No, I'm suspicious. I'm not even sure I'd call it a recovery. I mean, it's pretty flat, you know.
Yeah, the fact is we're not out of the woods. We're far from out of the woods.
Far from it.
And, you know, I can't tell you how many people I know that aren't employed and just aren't even looking anymore. Right. So we know they cook the numbers on the books, and that's just the way it is. But to put this on the people of Colorado, you know, right now, I don't think is necessarily the smartest thing. I know my utility bills at my small business and my home have gone up dramatically in just the last year alone. And that's without this.
Well, and we're talking about rural Colorado here, right, by and large. Not all the rural, quote unquote, rural co-ops give power only to rural Colorado, but by a lion's share, that's their only option for getting power. And so what this does is it increases the cost to really the struggling farmers and ranchers out there. And it just seems like the other side didn't care about that at all. Didn't care at all. Not a stitch.
No.
And so given that and really some anti-rancher legislation and just an attitude, I think, from the Dems in general on the great resource that our farmers and ranchers are here in this state, And just kind of ignoring that, brushing that off, you know, it's they certainly feel like they're not welcome here in Colorado anymore.
Yeah, they really feel like they're not being represented. And we're seeing this come about here, especially in Weld County, with this whole 50 were first state push.
Yeah, North Colorado, here we go. Yeah. You know. Yeah, and I don't want to see that, you know.
Granted, I don't think constitutionally it could happen. Oh, however,
could. Oh, actually, it could.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's a very viable thing. But what has to? There's a lot of steps that have to go into it. The state legislature has to agree to it. Congress has to agree to it. There's a whole slew of things that are going to have to fall into place. That just, I mean, heck, Puerto Rico can't even figure out how to get themselves to be a state. So I don't think
you see it actually happening.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't. It's not realistic. But just the fact that they're talking about it should make you think. You know, should make you stop and go, I wonder if maybe we're taking the wrong approach.
Exactly, and that's what we really need to get to. Is there's a whole, you know, the whole northern part of our state here is feeling disenfranchised and alienated.
The eastern part.
Myself, I mean, I think pretty much every Republican in the state at this point is feeling disenfranchised and alienated by, you know, the state lawmakers.
Yeah, you know, and when I moved to Colorado so many years ago, I was impressed with this place because I know that there's some more liberal elements in Fort Collins, and I wasn't that way, but I sure love talking to those people. There's some really nice, good folk here in Fort Collins, and I can have great discussions with them, and I love it.
I can have dinner with them. I can break bread with them.
Yeah, exactly, and it's great, and that's the environment I moved into, you know, and there felt to me like a real good balance between respect for the environment, you know, business. I would say between farmers and ranchers and urban life, I just felt all the way around like there was this great sense of just like everyone was working together for what was best for each of us, you know.
Right.
We had Loveland, you know, we had there it's not like there weren't disputes. Loveland and Fort Collins economically were kind of always at odds, you know. Loveland was trying to steal businesses away from Fort Collins.
They won that battle.
Well, they did because Fort Collins, you know, kept their taxation high. That, you know, kind of the same reason we lost GE here in the state. There's just not competitive taxation.
I mean, we're pushing business out of state left and right. Look at, you know, MacPaul and
exactly. We're just not creating a very. So here's the point, Jason. Is I really feel like, you know, whether it be Hickenlooper was in office, but we had Republicans in the House and Senate, whether it be we had Republicans in the House, Senate, and the governorship, you know, with Bill Owens or whatever, you know, it felt like we were really moving forward, that everyone was taking all of Colorado into consideration when we push legislation or whatever it is. I don't feel that way anymore. No. I feel like there's a real sense of a specific agenda.
There's a divide.
That's dividing us. It's really driving a wedge. And guess what? Republicans aren't in charge.
No.
not in the legislature, not in the executive.
We don't even have a say at this point. You know?
Yeah.
We just have to step back and watch this train wreck happen.
Yeah. It's sickening to me because I see the place that I love. Conservative, liberal, I don't care. I see the place that I love being thrown way, way out of balance in any particular direction is bad policy. Yeah. We need representation that's going to take all of Colorado into account, and that includes our farmers and ranchers that are really one of the strongest engines in this state of growth. It's without farmers, where's your next meal coming from?
Yeah.
You know, who's your local farmers? And they're supporting, you know, you're not going to be able to go, well, maybe you can go to McDonald's and get a hamburger because they've got enough, you know, money and resources to pull beef from just about anywhere in the world they want. Local places that, you know, charcoal broil or whatever, you know, they get their meat from local sources. I try to buy my meat from local sources because I want to support our local farmers. It's so sad. It's really, honestly, this 51st state initiative just sickens me. Not because they're doing it, but because of why.
Well, it's
because
a reflection of what's going on. Yeah, and we've got to, I think more than anything, you know, we got to use it to bring a spotlight onto some of these issues that people are feeling like they're just not being listened to at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a symptom of what's going on in the state house and with the legislation that's been going on.
Yeah. And certainly no one would be upset if we could just do this all under wraps. So maybe Hickenlooper's right. Everyone would just be happy and go on with life if we could just bury all this. No. I think, you know, and that's it. And the thing is people are paying attention a little bit more and you know, sending a clear message that, hey, you know what, Denver, you're not listening to us.
Right. And that needs to change. So the way that changes is, again, we're going to implore you people, please, get active. Get involved. Now is the time. We need to strengthen our front lines. And this is a war. Make no mistakes about it. This is a war, and we need to be fighting here on the front lines. And make no mistakes about the fact that Colorado is the front lines. Yes. Colorado, Texas, right now, these are such important states that we've got to take a stand in and really say, you know what? We're going to stand up and we're going to fight for this.
Well, so, you know, that's right. And as Coloradoans, we need to take our state back. I mean, just wrest it out of the hands of those that are trying to really turn this state into something other than the great place that it is.
Exactly. Well, I think that's about all we've got for this week, Jerry.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you guys. And we'll see you next week with more news from Larimer County.
Yep,
thank you very much.